Succession number 14238, Reel 2.
Mr. Gower, Reel 2.
There were three of us going into Dunkirk, the West Cove and the Holland. One of the ships, the Holland, went down outside Dunkirk, or on the way to Dunkirk. We dropped most of our crew on the outskirts of Dover. We dropped some more at Dover, and we dropped some more outside Dunkirk. And all it left on the ship was the captain, the first lieutenant, the chief stoker, the coxswain, Pash Baker and I. And we blew the Edward Nissen up in Dunkirk between the jetties. We came away from there. We rowed away from there, Dunkirk, in a boat. And then a motorboat came along. I think it was one of the Carl's boats. And put us aboard the Vivacious. And the skipper said, "What's the panic?" And we were told that the Jerrys were already in Dunkirk. And as we came away, where the Vivacious had been, the Jerrys were firing into its wake. And as we went along a bit further, so the shells came in, following us all the way up. The coxswain had managed to smuggle some rum aboard, and we drank a drop of rum. I'd never touched drink in all my life. And of course, it didn't take long to get a hold of me. I remember the following day when we were being asked our different experiences. And the First Lieutenant asked me why I wanted to stay behind to pull the ships closer together. And I told him that it seemed too far apart. So that was it. Anyway, I was given 5 days survivor's leave. Now that made me a survivor twice within 3 weeks. I forgot to tell them, you see, that I was under stoppage leave from the Kelly. And when I got back from me survivor's leave, my name came over the tannoy again. ABC McGower ST report down draft in Master at Arms. And they said to me that as I'd volunteered for submarines in February 40, my request had been granted to get down to the submarine base, Dolphin, which was a gospel. And so I went to the submarine service.
What did you think of your training for submarines?
It was good. It was good. I I'm a person that don't break my word, and I kept my promise that I would go into subs the first convenient moment. It's only because I was drafted to the Kelly and the Edward Nissen that I hadn't got in submarines earlier. And I'm fully convinced that had I been a non-submarine volunteer and I'm pretty sure that Lord Louis, he tried to get his old crew around him again. Incidentally, the Kelly was sunk a year later on my wife's birthday, the 23rd of May, 1941, Hayne Creek. Now, submarine life, there was no bull in it, no bull. And I took to it. I was up in Elphin, which was in Blyth, and the camaraderie in submarines among the crew was marvellous. And I had wonderful friends. My first submarine was the Sturgeon, and I did my training patrol on there. Lieutenant Gregory was the captain. Because it's such a long time ago, I don't think that we'd had any action. We might have done, it's just that it was a training patrol for me, and my attention was taken up in the training as opposed to action. My second submarine was the Sea Wolf. Lieutenant Field was the captain, and we were going out of Portsmouth accompanied by the Cutty Sark as an escort, and when I see the Cutty Sark, especially on these marathon runs, it makes me think of submarine days. I was on lookout duty at the time, sweeping from 90 degrees to port to 90 degrees starboard, looking aft. And I reported a fast-moving ship on the stern, and I said to Lieutenant Field, "Sir, there is a fast-moving craft moving towards us on the stern." He said to me, "Watch it, Gower." Now I reported it with every 5 degrees coming down on the port side. And when she was on the bow, when she was on the quarter, I said to the captain, I said, "That ship, sir," I said, "is a destroyer, as she's moving down the starboard side. Down the port side." It travelled along, and he said to me, "Let me know when it's abreast. And the destroyer came abreast of us, and the captain asked for the oldest lamp to be handed up as a signal lamp. The destroyer started to challenge, and I said to the captain, "The destroyer, sir, is challenging." "Right," he said, "give us the oldest." And in the time that he got the oldest, he couldn't have grasped it properly, he dropped it. And the time it was handed up to him, the destroyer started to fire at us, and the shells were whizzing past our ears. I ducked down between the bridge of the conning tower, and the first lieutenant was hiding behind the periscope standard as his shells whizzed across us, and the whirring of the displaced air was tremendous. To this, the captain retrieved the orders lamp, and the signal was sent out. He could not answer the challenge because I should think he was trembling. He just shot a light at the destroyer as she stopped firing. He turned round to me, he said to me, "Cowher," he said, "I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry." He said nothing more. He just went down into the control room, and we went out to sea.
What nationality was the destroyer?
British.
Was it identified?
No.
Whereabouts was this?
This was coming out of Portsmouth.
When would it have been? Because you joined Seawolf in 5th of March 1941.
Well, it's on the diver's date. There was no recording of it in any book or anything else, because you must remember, you see, that captains have to protect themselves, don't they?
Yes.
You see, I mean, this could be termed as inefficiency, but of course Lieutenant Field wasn't inefficient at all. He was an efficient man. Unfortunately, when he left the Sea Wolf, he went by aircraft and was shot down in the Middle East. Lieutenant Wraith came to the boat. I don't know whether he received his DSO before he came to us, but he was a DSO. We were going out to Russia on the with a PQ-16. We went to Iceland first, and we picked up the convoy. When we got abreast of North Cape and Bear Island, Smoky Smith, the signalman, Smoky Smith and I was always on watch together, because we were special lookouts. Whenever there was any trouble at all on the surface, number one lookouts would be called for, and Smoky Smith and I went up. We were the premium lookouts in case of trouble. Smokey said to the Captain, there is a aircraft, he said, arriving, so and so and so and so. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the captain said, all right, Smith, he said, report to the convoy commander. And I took up the numbers, 6, 7, 8, 9, went up and up and up. The aircraft was upon us, and I said to Lieutenant Rates, I said, there's a Stuka coming for us, sir. I said, he's just going up. He said, watch it, gal. I said, watch it. I couldn't take my blessed eyes off of it. And the Stuka then screamed down. The skipper then gave so many degrees to starboard, so many degrees to port, and the bomb fell off our port bow. And as a Stuka pilot came out of his dive, it seemed that our eyes looked at one another and he smiled at me. And I always said that if only I'd have had a potato in my hand, I could have hit him with it. It was that close. At the time, the PQ-16 was the biggest convoy that ever went to Russia. 35 ships. And what we did, you see, we went into we went into Poliana, and there we were based up in the dormitories. We found the Russians a decent crowd, especially the ones that I knew. I used to enjoy sports with them. I used to go to their sports ground, and I started to pick up a bit of Russian. And I found them all right, the ordinary. And we spent 3 months up in Russia, and it was a question of weaving out of icebergs, sitting as lookouts on the periscope standards, and your flesh began to get numb with the cold, being still. And this is how we sit up there for half hour out of every hour. And then we came away from Poliana. We did another patrol, and then we came back to England. And we lost our way off the Shetlands, and speaking to my old captain, he used to remark about that lost week that we had.
Did you ever get into trouble ashore in Russia?
No, never did.
Did they seem to be appreciative for what you were doing?
Well, I do laugh about this, We went to one of the Red Fleet's concerts just inside the town. And as I walked in, a big army Russian wench, she stood up to let me sit down. It was so comical. I tried to tell her no, it was all right, but no, she insisted that I sat down while she stood. So, yes, maybe they were appreciative. Now, the women up there, they used to look after us. And we used to laugh and joke with them. And they used to give us a rice soup. But of course, it didn't take long for the boys to put the sugar in it. And we had our sweet before we had our dinner. You know. And they used to do also a dried fruit. Yeah, we didn't do too bad. We didn't have potatoes as such. But mostly they were in soups. Well, we came back.
You say you were 3 months in Russia?
Yeah.
Actually ashore?
Yeah. Well, we had to do patrols. You know, we had to do patrols from Russia, from Poliana, you see. And then coming back, of course, we were the outside cover for PQ-17, the most bombed and convoy of the lot. Bombed, shelled, whatever it was. And then we came home to England and lost that week. Or Scotland and lost that week.
Did you know about the decision of the Admiralty to abandon that convoy?
No. No. Not at all. I went back to Russia again for another 3 months. What we used to do, you see, we used to go up there, do a patrol or a couple of patrols up there, and then come back and do a patrol off the Norwegian coast and come back again. So that was the second 3 monthly period. By this time, I was learning Russian. And I used to make friends with the Russian sentries at the end of the pier. One particular day, I wanted to inquire about a certain letter, because there's only two letters in the Russian alphabet, and it was like a K backed onto a K. You could say like a beetle, four legs, and I could find nothing that would give me any indication what it stood for. And to find the meaning of the letter, I asked my friends in the tent to show me a book, even an international book, and they loaned it to me. They let me have a look at it, but one of the Russians, he was a new boy, had come to the tent. He picked up a rifle, and the rifle was about 4 inches away from my head. And I had a moment of fear. I looked practically boss-eyed at the rifle and the chap's face. I was completely dry, the mouth was completely dry, I could hardly speak, until some of the older Russian sentries began talking to the chap, and his anger gradually subsided. After that, I started to learn that you couldn't trust the Russians, inasmuch as you had to have an answer ready for them. I learned the phrase, Ya Englishki Matros, Pavodolotka Moskoy Volk. That means to say that I was an English sailor on the submarine Seawolf. It was a very, very cold day, and snow was falling fast. And we thought we would have a bit of a laugh with the Russians. We went up to the jetty in our singlets. We sauntered up, joking all the way, to ditch the gash. Everybody was looking at us. This story is in the book Beneath the Sea with Johnny Jack, and is recorded in that book. Everybody was looking at us, and we sorted, we laughed, we joked, and we came back. You've got to imagine the situation. Everybody had all their winter clothing on, their thick big coats and their hats. There was us. I headed this story. Mad Dogs of Englishmen Out in the Midday Snow. And then we sauntered back again. We stopped on the gangway, and we told another joke. But we were freezing. We were really freezing. And when we got down to the boat, we thought we won another ticket so close to the little electric fire that was there. And, we thought it was a bit of fun. We were only kids and we were mad, you know. I mean, I was only 21, 22. I mean, this is young. I've seen so much in life. You take, I believe, Vershaw Campbell. He was a submarine skipper, and he was only 23 years of age. You take my old captain, Captain Rakes. He was only 28 when he was a captain on the Seawolf.